Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and my next guest writes the Plumline blog for the Washington Post. Do you read it? Which labels itself as a liberal take on the news. He has now authored his first book, An Uncivil War, Taking Back Our Democracy in an Age of Trumpian Disinformation and Thunderdome Politics, in which Greg Sargent takes a deep look at democracy and argues that predictions of its erosion are not just exaggerations of the left, but that the Democratic Party bears some of the blame. The book is especially timely, of course, following the ugly Supreme Court nomination fight, where Republicans and Democrats appeared to be at outright political war with each other. And with civility in the title of the book, it's even a little extra timely because of how Hillary Clinton used the word just the other day on how to wage the political fight against Trump and other Republicans at this time. This is Clinton with Christiane Amanpour on CNN.
Well, certainly I would love to see us return to civility, listening to one another, working out our differences. That is not the Republican Party that exists today, and that is certainly not the administration that we have in power right now. When the Republican Senate denied the right of President Obama to have his nominee for the Supreme Court, Merrick Garland, heard.
I think you even wrote that they stole a justice from the Democratic
Party.
I think
they did. They stonewalled. And that was such a breach of Senate ethics and the constitutional responsibility of the Senate that you cannot be civil with a political party that wants to destroy what you stand for, what you care about. That's why I believe if we are fortunate enough to win back the House and or the Senate, that's when civility can start again. But until then, the only thing that the Republicans seem to recognize and respect is strength.
Hillary Clinton with Christiane Amanpour on CNN. A longer version of that clip so that you get more of the context than you usually hear in other media. And with that, we welcome Greg Sargent from The Washington Post, author now of An Uncivil War, Taking Back Our Democracy in an Age of Trumpian Disinformation and Thunderdome Politics. Greg, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me on.
Let's start right on that Hillary clip. What were you thinking when that broke into the news, given the release of your book with its title, An Uncivil War?
Well, I think it's really important that you played the whole thing. If you note, you know, she says very explicitly that civility in our politics can't exist in anything like a recognizable form because of today's Republican Party and what Trump is. Now, what she's referring to there, despite the Republican bad faith efforts to pretend that this is about, you know, encouraging violence or and so forth and so on, what she's actually saying is that Democrats need, and she's speaking to reporters too, I think, she's saying that Democrats and reporters and neutral observers need to reckon forthrightly with what today's Republican Party and Trump are, which is, she's pointing specifically, I think, to Republican counter-majoritarian tactics of all kinds, the entrenchment of minority rule through, you know, through tactics like gerrymandering, voter suppression, stealing Supreme Court seats, and so forth. And she's also saying we have to reckon forthrightly with the true illiberal and authoritarian nature of Trump's politics.
Let's take one of those, gerrymandering. And in the book, you don't just call it gerrymandering, you call it computer-assisted or computer-generated gerrymandering. What's that?
Well, so what happened in 2010 was sort of a perfect storm of factors that really kind of crushed down on the Democratic Party. And I take care to note in the book that Democrats got caught napping. And by the way, they will say that. They will forthrightly admit this. So Obama had won, took over with the economy losing 100,000 jobs a month. You know, the Republican outrage and about Obama was compounded by the seriousness of the continuing economic fallout.
The financial crisis in 2008 helped get him elected.
Right. And so what happened was there was kind of this coalescence of both the continuing economic crash and aftermath and the Republican rout in many state legislatures across the country coming just 1 year before a new redistricting.
The origin of the Tea Party was in that little election cycle between 2008 and 2010. And what many listeners may know, many listeners may not know, that also makes the 2018 midterm elections so important, not even so much in Congress, though of course that's important too, but at the level of state legislature, is that we're coming up to that every 10 years redistricting. The 2010 election was a sweep for the Republicans, and we're living with the gerrymandering of Congress and other districts ever since. 2020 will be another opportunity for either party to determine how district lines are drawn. And the Democrats are now so far behind in state legislatures around the country that it seems to me they better do well in 2018 to make up some of that ground, to be close enough to become the majority in many more states in 2020 if they want to avoid another sort of gerrymandering apocalypse.
That's exactly right. One thing I talk about at some length in the book is the urgency and the enormous stakes of winning back ground on the state level in this election and the next one. Now, Democrats are in an incredibly deep hole in the level of the state legislatures, but if they win a number of governorships back this year, they actually have an alternate play at their disposal, which goes like this. In many states, governors can veto bad congressional maps that are drawn by the legislature. So if Democratic governors take over in some of these big states, they will have a seat at the table when the congressional and state legislative maps for the next decade are drawn. We're seeing already what that looks like in Pennsylvania, right? Pennsylvania had a Democratic governor. The result was that the drawing of the maps was punted over to a court, which drew a much fairer one. And now, as a result of that, Democrats are expected to pick up a number of additional seats. Now, you know, if Democratic governors can take over in these big states, it could actually make a big difference to the map for another decade in the House and the state legislatures.
My guest is Greg Sargent, who writes the Plumline blog for the Washington Post and is now the author of the book, An Uncivil War, Taking Back Our Democracy in an Age of Trumpian Disinformation and Thunderdome Politics. And we can take your phone calls for Greg Sargent at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Another thing you mentioned in the book structurally is low voter turnout, dismal voter turnout, in fact. Certainly we're seeing, we saw the Washington Post poll that came out just the other day that indicated we may be in for a historically high midterm election voter turnout because everybody's so galvanized. But I think the experts go kind of back and forth, and maybe it's ideological which side people land on why voter turnout is generally so bad. Like, is it because government does such a bad job that a lot of people who are left out of power feel like they're hopeless? Why bother to vote if the powers that be are just going to rig things for themselves anyway? Versus people are content enough, and they're motivated to vote more when they're angry and dissatisfied, like might be the case this year. And so low voter turnout might actually be a sign of things working relatively well. Where do you come down on any of this?
Well, I think one thing that we have to think about when we talk about low voter turnout, particularly when it comes to Democrats, is the socioeconomic dimension of it. Democrats have had a tough time in midterm elections, particularly when there's a Democrat in the White House, as we saw under Obama in 2010 and 2014. One of the reasons that they tend to turn out at such low rates in some of these midterms is who makes up the Democratic base. We're talking about a lot of young people, a lot of single women, unmarried women, and those are groups that tend to be economically a little bit more transient and just don't have the wherewithal to get out to vote as easily as some of these Republican constituencies in midterms, which are made up of, I should also say, minorities too, of course, on the Democratic side. And the Republican midterm electorate tends to be older, whiter, married. We're talking about married women. We're talking about white families, old aging families that really vote at higher rates than some of these Democratic constituencies.
That's interesting. Yes, older people vote more than younger people. That's one of the main voting demographics. And if Republicans tend to be older, then you're going to see they get more turnout.
Right, and this year the whole thing could get scrambled by the interesting crossover to the Democratic Party that we're seeing among college-educated white women. In Virginia, in the Virginia governor's race, in Alabama, in some of these special elections, including in places, you know, deep in Trump territory, such as Pennsylvania's 18th district, we saw really surprisingly large turnout among college-educated white voters, particularly women, who seem to be voting Democratic this time as part of the anti-Trump backlash. And so that does scramble the equation. In many ways, we could see Trump going some ways towards solving the traditional Democratic midterm drop-off problem.
When we come back from a break, I want to ask you about the difference between taking back a majority for the Democratic Party and taking back our democracy, which is in the title of your book, and see how you think that democracy itself is eroding right now, not just losses for the side that you tend to be on. So stay with us, and we'll take some phone calls, too, for Greg Sargent from The Washington Post, author of An Uncivil War. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Quick reminder, I'll be filling in tonight for Jonathan Capehart on our national midterm election season call-in show, America on the Line. That's 8 o'clock tonight here on WNYC and public radio stations around the country. Also, quick reminder, so I don't forget before the end of the segment, that our guest, Greg Sargent, Washington Post Plumline blogger, will be doing a personal appearance in conjunction with his new book, An Uncivil War, Taking Back Our Democracy in an Age of Trumpian Disinformation and Thunderdome Politics. And that's going to be at the Brennan Center for Justice at the NYU Law School on Tuesday, October 30th. So it's not this week, but if you're interested in Greg Sargent, make a note of Tuesday, October 30th at noon at the Brennan Center. You can register for that event online. Let's take a phone call for Greg Sargent from Edward in Rockville Center. Edward, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have an idea, which is that I think the senatorial candidates from the Democratic Party should pledge that if they get elected, that they will reinstall the 60-vote rule, the cloture rule. I think that that would then immediately say that people have to work across the aisle, and I think it would be well-received on the campaign trail.
Edward, thank you very much. Is the filibuster and the erosion of the filibuster, certainly for judicial nominations, one of the structural problems with our democracy that you see?
Well, I think that the problem you'd run into with a proposal like that is that the left wing of the Democratic Party would immediately reject it. There's a movement afoot among what might be called procedural radicals, although I don't think that's a great label for it, but there's a movement afoot among progressives and liberals who are trying to push for even more abolishment of the filibuster. They want to get rid of the filibuster on legislation as well. And when there have been some Democratic senators who have floated this idea here and there, and they've been met with a furious outcry on the left, the feeling among progressive critics of democracy is that the only way that progressives are going to ever get anything passed is if all counter-majoritarian bulwarks such as the filibuster are done away with. This is becoming particularly pressing in the minds of progressives right now because of what's happening on the Supreme Court. the left is looking forward to a period at some point when there's full democratic rule and they can pass things like Medicare for all and some sort of immigration reform along the lines of what the left is pushing for. And they expect the conservative majority on the court to strike that stuff down based on frivolous legal theory. So they're even talking about packing the courts or packing the court in order to fight that. So I don't think you'd find much of a reception for reinstalling the filibuster.
What do you find to be the most disturbing points of erosion in our democracy, not just in policies that you may not like coming from Trump and the Republican Congress, but actual erosion of democracy?
Well, the Republican full-on embrace of counter-majoritarian tactics has to be seen as an extremely troubling development. It's been going on for many years, though, and it predates Trump. And we one paradox I try to write about in this book is that Trump, it took a figure like Trump, who's just so singularly menacing and hostile and contemptuous of democracy, to focus everyone's attention on the political system. Yet all these problems predate Trump and have been essentially put in place by the Republican Party for many years now. Voter suppression, gerrymandering, although that is done by both parties, in fairness. This tactic that Hillary talked about, this escalation in radical tactics when it comes to holding off Democratic appointees to the court, all these things are clearly eroding any sort of sense of an ideal of fair play in politics. And I try to write about whether there's a way to get back to such an ideal.
Is there?
I think it's a complicated question. And where I come down is that Democrats have to do what Hillary said, which is be forthright in confronting the reality of today's anti-democratic Republican Party and Trump's illiberal authoritarian politics. And that means being ready to escalate when it's appropriate. On the other hand, I also argue that Democrats should stand for something more than simply following the right over this cliff into procedural nihilism. They need to also, Democrats, I mean, need to also stand for trying to restore fair play where possible. And the way I think that can be done is through disarming some of these counter-majoritarian techniques and tactics that Republicans use where possible. So ending voter suppression, nonpartisan commissions that will draw congressional maps to do away with gerrymandering, and so forth. And it's kind of going to be a pick-and-choose set of battles. It's not going to be easy. I think the right balance can be found, though.
On voter suppression, what do you think about the Georgia story right now? And for people who haven't been following this, the Georgia Secretary of State, Brian Kemp, is also the Republican gubernatorial candidate against Democrat Stacey Abrams. And Kemp, as the Georgia Secretary of State, gets to decide on some of the voting rules and allegedly is holding up thousands of voter registration applications for racial and partisan reasons. They're very disproportionately black Democratic Georgians over, you know, minuscule things like the hyphen and the hyphenated last name is missing and things like that. Is that a scandal or is that just partisan warfare?
I think it crosses over into scandal, but I want to look at this in a larger context and go back to the stuff we've been seeing about Brett Kavanaugh. Here's the nightmare scenario that we need to think about. The conservative majority on the court is made up at least in part of justices who were chosen by presidents who didn't win the popular vote, who were confirmed by senators who don't represent a majority of the population. This conservative majority will now make it harder to step in and do things about what we're seeing in places like Georgia and North Dakota and so forth when it comes to voter suppression. The conservative majority on the court is less likely to strike down future voter suppression efforts, no matter how bad they get. The conservative majority is also less likely than it would have been with Kennedy to step in and police gerrymandering. And in fact, this conservative majority could at some point strike down as unconstitutional these types of nonpartisan redistricting commissions. So we're looking at kind of an escalation of counter-majoritarian tactics here that are kind of, I don't know what happens in the long run. I think it really could lead to a major legitimacy crisis.
Greg Sargent, maybe you read him as author of the Washington Post's Plumline blog. He's now the author of the book, An Uncivil War, Taking Back Our Democracy in an Age of Trumpian Disinformation and Thunderdome Politics. And again, if you're interested in seeing him in person, he'll be at the Brennan Center for Justice at the NYU Law School on Tuesday, October 30th at noon. You can register to attend that event on their site. Greg, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.